Hi everyone, welcome to Who We Are. Today I am so excited and have been so looking forward to this conversation with Wes Kao. Wes is an entrepreneur, educator and thought leader who has reshaped the way we think about learning, leadership and innovation. As the co-founder of Mevin, she's also pioneered the concept of cohort-based courses, really empowering educators, creators, and also professionals to build our transformating learning experiences that are interactive, community-driven, and action-oriented. On a personal note, Wes, your insights have had such an impact on me. On top of, you know, the articles that you post on your website, I also have been following your email newsletter, and your content is always relevant, relatable, and actionable. For those of us in our audience who may not be as familiar with your work, could you share a little bit about your journey and what led you to the work that you're doing today?
Yes. So I've always been interested in education. I'm so inspired by Mevin's mission because it's all about continuing education, learning once you are a working professional, how to improve your craft, how to get better at creating high quality work, how to become a better leader, product manager, designer, engineer, whatever it might be that you have dedicated your focus to, your profession to. Yeah, especially with leadership, you know, a lot of times people think, are some people born with finesse, born with executive presence, born being a strong communicator that is able to connect with people in a really compelling way? And I think that from a distance, everything looks like magic, right? But I really believe that you can break down so many of these topics into component parts, into skills that are then learnable.
Yeah. I love that. And we're going to dive right into some today. Wes, also curious, you know, from your years of experience and also looking at different leaders that you've coached and encountered through the years, from your perspective, what do you think makes a great leader, especially in today's rapidly changing world where, you know, creators and online communities also constantly redefine influence and connection?
Well, first, I believe that anyone can be a leader. So it is not just about your title. It's not just if you are a startup founder or CEO or a VP somewhere. I think that any time that you decide to step up and take the reins and add value and drive things forward in a way that they wouldn't have been driven forward unless you were there, that's you taking leadership. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I think things are getting increasingly competitive, right? No matter what it is that you do, whether it's your company or, you know, if you're your profession, there are dozens, if not hundreds of other people who do something similar, who have a similar background, years of experience, who work at similar companies. And I think it's so important to think about how can I sharpen my judgment in different situations? How can I make more correct decisions? How can I have better hypotheses about what might happen and be more correct more often? I think that element of judgment is really what separates really great leaders from only okay leaders. And especially once the, you know, things like the years of experience, you know, there's so many people with 15, 20 years of experience, but why are some people more successful than others, right? What makes them stand out? And I really do think that it comes down to your good judgment. And so that's something that I think a lot about honing for myself, about teaching to my team. And it's not really something that we're ever taught.
Absolutely. And let's say if someone who's listening today, you know, they're thinking, oh my, Wes, how do I hone and have better judgment and sharpen those skills? What are some examples or what are some ways that you would advise us?
I think one of the first things is to lean into your powers of observation. So that means observing other people with and other companies, you know, things around you with a sharper sense of nuance. You know, if you are only learning through explicit forms of learning, through a course or through your manager giving you explicit feedback or your customers giving you explicit feedback, that's really not enough because there's so much that goes unsaid. And it would be wonderful if everyone just said, you know, exactly how they felt or what they really thought. But so much of the time, the people that we're working with, our customers, our colleagues, will default to politeness. And so they're not necessarily saying,
especially in Asia, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're not necessarily saying, oh, the way that you said that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Or, oh, you know, you're being a little bit pushy there, right? Or you're not being pushy enough or whatever. Like, people aren't necessarily telling us these things. And so it's up to us, I believe, to observe, to watch for people's reactions, to try to read between the lines a little bit more so that we are picking up on these implicit clues and these implicit signals, not just the really explicit stuff.
How can we get better at that? It's almost like, you know, having those feelers and sensitivity to be able to pick out. And I think sometimes it's also, you know, it's a fine balance and tension between ensuring that we're not oversensitive or, you know, having some personal assumptions behind those, but also in ensuring that, you know, we are sharp and accurate in certain observations. So what is your advice on that?
I think the biggest thing is choosing to make this a priority. It's one of those things where, you know, we're so go, go, go. We're so back to back that we finish one thing and we're immediately on to the next. And I think it's deciding that you want to observe more, that you want to be more attuned to different signals that, you might not be picking up on yet. And so, you know, for some of my clients, I recommend that they do a work journal. So they are making note of different decisions that they're making and then closing the loop on how did it turn out? Most of us never look back and say, how did it turn out? Right? We think like we're going to make the best decision given the information that we have at the moment, which is great. And then we move on to the next thing. Whereas when you close the loop, then you're able to really learn from what happened. And you were
and
able
connect
to
the dots.
Exactly. Update your mental model, right? Because if you've been going through life kind of on autopilot, not all areas of your life, but some areas, right? Your mental models might be a bit outdated, you know? And for me, like every once in a while, I like breaking my own rules to see like, does that even still hold true? Right? Yeah. What evidence do I have that this either holds true or that it doesn't? So that's one big thing. It's a work journal. And in that, you can also observe people who you admire. So either you admire them from afar. So these might be thought leaders, experts that you follow online, or they can be your coworkers. They can be your co-founder or your, you know, fellow executive or whatever else. What are the things that you notice they do well? And then try to break it down. You know, if they said something in a meeting that was really sharp, write down what they said. If someone disagreed in a way that was really respectful and got their point across, like write down what they said. Because once you make note of it, you're going to be able to see patterns. And then you're going to be able to borrow what works for others that might work for you too.
Yeah, I love that because it's such an intentional journey to improving and becoming better leaders. And I think, you know, we all know that leadership also often involves inspiring action with clarity. Why do you think, Wes, that concise communication is such a critical skill for leaders today? And how can we get better at it practically?
I think being concise is so important because your audience, your recipients are busy with a lot of other things, right? And I saw this statistic about the percentage of people who are multitasking in meetings. And it was shockingly high. I forget exactly what it was, but it was something, I think it was like 70%, somewhere around there or higher. Don't quote me on that. We'll look it up after. But I remember it being just so high. It was like the majority of people are doing something else, right? And so if you are wanting to cut through the noise, you need to give people a reason to listen. And so being clear with what you are saying, being compelling with what you are saying is so incredibly important. And I think that a really common mistake with conciseness is people think concise equals short, brief, right? Fewer words. Yeah. And that's only part of the picture. You can actually be concise with a long memo. Right? It's actually about economy of words. It's about density of insight. So you can have a 100-word message that is actually not concise at all, that's meandering, that's convoluted, that's repetitive, and you can have a 1,000-word memo that's incredibly concise, that packs in a lot of insight, that that is bringing the reader along for a journey, that is painting a picture, that is showing appropriate data and evidence, right? So it's not just about, oh, we need to make this shorter. This needs to be, you know, 3 sentences or less. It's not about that.
I remember you've also written about avoiding incepting negative ideas, where sometimes leaders, you know, we unintentionally frame situations poorly. What advice would you give us to help us ensure that messages inspire positivity and action?
Yes. So incepting negative ideas is something I see all the time. And once you start paying attention to it, you'll catch it in your own work and you'll also catch it in other people's work. So an example of incepting a negative idea is saying, let's say that you are having a hard conversation with a colleague and you say, you know, I'm not your enemy here. You know, I don't want to be your enemy. And all of a sudden the person was like, well, I didn't think you were my enemy, Rachel. But now that you say that, I'm wondering whether you might be. Like, you are kind of acting in ways that are enemy-like, right? So that's an example of incepting an idea where, you know, you are giving people this vocabulary. You are using this frame that before they weren't really looking through this frame. But once you mention it, it's kind of hard to unsee, right? Mm-hmm. Same as, you know, one of my direct reports, I was talking to her about a project and she was kind of pushing back and she said, you know, Wes, I'm not trying to avoid doing this or anything. But once she said that, I thought, I think you are, because this is a lot of work and it's kind of a grind. It's kind of a slog. And I think you are trying to avoid doing this. I think that's why you're pushing back, right? Whereas I might not have thought about that beforehand, but because she mentioned this idea of trying to avoid doing this work, like all of a sudden I was thinking through that frame. So it's so important to watch out for these little moments where you might unintentionally be—
And consciously.
Exactly. Yes. To be more conscious about it. You know, I think one really easy switch is at the end of emails, a lot of times people will say, let me know if you have any concerns. Okay, concerns. We are incepting a negative idea here now, right? Wow. Because before, the person might have received your message. They might have been glad you shared stuff, right? Wow. But then now it's like, oh, do I have concerns? Maybe I do, right?
Or should I? Should I have?
Should I have concerns? Yeah, like what are things I should be concerned about? When a really easy swap is to say, let me know if you have any questions, right? Questions is much more neutral of a term. It accomplishes the same thing, right? Which is inviting the person to speak up if they have anything, you know, they might want to ask or might want to share, right? So swapping out concerns for questions, really simple way to be more positive, to be more neutral, and have your audience think in the direction that you want them to think.
Wow, Wes, these are skills that are not just applicable for us at work as leaders, but also at home. You know, when you were sharing it, I was just thinking, sometimes we unconsciously maybe say to our partners or our kids, like, it's not that I love to nag at you, but, you know.
Exactly, yes, yeah.
And then it seeds into their minds that, oh, you're nagging again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is so powerful.
Yeah, and, you know, the reason why this is such an important concept is because ideas are fuzzy in our minds until we put them into words. Once we put them into words, they become much more crystallized. They become much more concrete. And so let's say you're having a perfectly reasonable conversation with your partner. You're asking them to and reminding them to do a perfectly reasonable thing. But you say, you know, I'm not trying to nag you, or, you know, I don't mean to bother you and nag you. All of a sudden, they now think through the lens of, is this person breathing down my neck, always giving me trouble, always making my life hard? When in reality, you were actually being very reasonable. So I am very conscious of avoiding incepting negative ideas, you know, especially if you come from a place where your request is actually very reasonable. You know, the thing that you're discussing is very fair. You don't want to accidentally hurt your own cause by framing it under a more negative lens.
And one of the other things that you advocate for is also shipping over perfection, which is really about taking action rather than waiting for that perfect moment. I think this is something that so many of us can relate to as well. Can you share with us, Wes, is there a story where this mindset made a big difference and how we as leaders, all of us, can model this for our teams?
Mm-hmm. I like calling myself an action-oriented worrier. So I'm a big worrier. I think a lot. I'm a big overthinker, but yeah. I'm also quite fast at turning this worry into action. And I find that turning it into action really helps with avoiding just kind of getting stuck in your own mind. And so I think this philosophy of mine is, you know, I love this quote from Mike Tyson, the boxer, who said that everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Yes.
So I love this quote because we might have ideas and assumptions and plans about what we might want to do, but until those ideas interact with the market, we don't really know which of those hypotheses or assumptions were spot on. So I'm a really big fan of having a fast feedback loop where I can get some insight from the market. Right? So move stuff from within my head into the outside world in a small way where I don't have to, it won't be embarrassing if things mess up. I don't have to backtrack, right? Like there's smart ways to design an experiment where you limit the downside, but you just start getting some data about, are people into this? You know, are people excited about this offer or this product or this idea? Where might I be wrong in my some of my ideas, or where might they be, you know, more interested? For my own course, for example, I launched that last fall. I had an idea of what I might want to teach, but I could position it in so many different ways. I can, you know, zoom in and have a different scope, all kinds of different scope. And I wasn't really sure what to title it, you know, which part of my audience to really, focus on. I decided to basically ask my newsletter subscribers and my coaching clients for some initial input on a couple options that I was playing around with. Yeah. And one thing that I did that was really, really helpful was I drafted some copy on my course page describing the course, describing the curriculum, describing here's what we're going to dive into, and describing the problem that I was really trying to address with my course. It's on executive communication. And then I hopped on a couple different calls with prospective students. And I literally screen shared and had my page up. And we went line by line. And I said, wow, call out the parts that resonate with you. Like those things make you say, yes, like that's me. Or like, yes, I want to learn that. Or that really speaks to me. And then also point out all the things that are confusing or boring. Right. And so what was so interesting is within two or three calls, I was already seeing a clear pattern where people were pointing at the same thing being confusing. So at that point, I could either cut it or improve how I explain it. And so instead of guessing, how do I improve this page? How do I tell what resonates with people? You know, originally I was just thinking, do I just kind of haphazardly start trimming the word count? You know, instead of doing that, I was able to get real input on what people actually resonated with. And I felt so much more confident launching the page, knowing that these prospective students had already helped give some input and helped shape what was on that page.
What are some steps that you have taken that have allowed you to get to a place where you can also, while being inspired by the way different leaders or creators or entrepreneurs do certain things, come back and pull back to the core of who you are and see how you want to use that information to apply it to what's relevant for you?
One of the things that I think a lot about is this something that I can get myself to do? And I'll unpack that a bit because I would say earlier in my career, I could use brute force to power through a lot of different things. You know, I would just use that energy and learn whatever I needed to learn, power through, you know, different situations. And as I've progressed my career, as I've gotten older, I've realized that for whatever reason, I can unpack maybe some of the reasons, it's harder for me to just do something if it's not something that excites me, that uses my skills and my strengths. You know, I think part of it is, you know, as we mature and as we build up experience, we realize more about where we can add the most value and what we enjoy doing, right? Where our strengths really are. Whereas when you're young, you're still kind of figuring that out, right? Everything's kind of hard because it's all new, right? And so I found it in recent years, the world is not my oyster. It's not unlimited options because I literally cannot get myself to do certain things. And so I think that actually, you know, most people, you might hear this and think, well, that's depressing or something, right? But I actually think it's incredibly encouraging because, and empowering, because if the world were really your oyster and there were unlimited options, you would have a very difficult time deciding what to do. Because the world is not your oyster and you are built a certain way, you have certain idiosyncrasies and certain proclivities and inclinations, those things help narrow down the kinds of things that you may want to do. Right? And so, for example, there are people who are really big community builders that are very social, that like being always on, right? And so they might run a community where they're talking to their community members every day or every week, right? And there's other thought leaders, creators who are the opposite, who have an asynchronous course that people can sign up for anytime. It's pre-recorded. You never have to interact with the instructor, but you learn a lot from that instructor, right? Through their videos and the written materials, whatever it might be. And so based on your personality, you might like being always on, you know, you might be, you know, more extroverted, or you might be someone who is more introverted, you know, or you might value your time freedom more than someone else. You might not want to be always on, right? So based on your personality, you can find something that works for you instead of feeling like, you have to mold yourself to be a certain way. And it feels like a fight all the time, you know, to need to do that. One phrase that I have for myself that's kind of a guiding mantra is be the meest me.
Wow.
Yeah. It's huge. I mean,
please repeat that for all of us.
I want to be the meest me.
Wow. And that would be your definition for success at the end of the day, that you have been the you was you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's such a guiding principle for me to choose which projects to take on, which areas to invest in, what not to do. You know, I think it's
amazing.
It's so important because, you know, for a while I thought that all struggle was good struggle, that it meant that I was growing, right? Because, you know, so many of us are taught that, you know, if it's painful, if it's struggle, then it's growth, right? You're challenging yourself. You are pushing yourself. And in some ways that's true, but I actually don't think that that's always true. I think that sometimes,
that's your spiky point of view, Wes.
Yeah. So not all struggle is good for your growth. Yeah. I just don't think it is. Some of it is, but it takes judgment and wisdom to be able to discern between good struggle versus bad struggle.
Productive struggle versus unproductive struggle.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, if you are really anxious about something and you're not looking forward to it and you're constantly dreading it, is that really how you want to spend your days and your weeks and your months and your years? Like, you could argue that, well, I'm anxious, you know, I'm reframing it as excitement, right? We've all heard that. It's not anxiety, it's excitement, right? And, you know, sometimes it is, but I think that we need to be honest with ourselves, you know? I remember talking to Lenny Rachitsky, who runs Lenny's newsletter, you know, very popular in tech, and he's an investor in Maven. And I invited him to an event that we were doing. It was to announce our fundraise, and asked him if he wanted to speak and say a few words. And he said that he would politely decline. And I asked, you know, can you explain why? And he said, I don't like public speaking. And I have, you know, I've been lucky enough to be able to build a thriving career where I don't have to do certain things that don't come naturally to me or that I don't enjoy as much. And I just absolutely love that. That was actually such a light bulb moment for me. Wow. That, you know, here was this person who I respected so much, who is so good at his craft, is so well respected, and I didn't think that, you know, he was so intentional about turning away certain opportunities or just saying no to a whole category of things, right?
And like, be okay with that.
And be okay with that. Yeah. And, yeah. And not judge himself. I think, you know, for myself, like if before that moment, if I had done that, I would have thought, well, Wes, like you're hiding from a growth opportunity. You know, if you're afraid of doing the speech, then you should definitely do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think there are times when we do want to lean into things that we're afraid of. But I also think that the way Lenny was thinking about it was also so nuanced and so wise, mm-hmm. you know, that there are plenty of interesting, meaty challenges with growing his newsletter and with his podcast, right? And that he's able to connect with people through his podcast, which he records on his own terms, right? He can edit it. It's his own setup, et cetera, yep. versus like being a public speaker at someone else's event and whatnot. Wow. And just the nuance that he was thinking about that. I love that. And I think that it helped me realize that I could choose which kinds of challenges that I wanted to say yes to. I don't have mm-hmm. to say yes to everything just because it feels like a challenge or feels like, wow. you know, like it could be a struggle.
Well, that is really a great example and something, you know, food for thought for all of us to really, you know, take in and be more intentional about. Thank you for sharing that, Wes. And if I can also, you know, go back to something that you talked about, especially in the beginning, where you talked also about developing confidence and clarity in our decision making as leaders. For emerging leaders or leaders who are listening to you, what habits or practices do you think are most effective for us in developing that?
I have a framework that I call rigorous thinking. And the idea behind rigorous thinking is to have a thoughtful way of making decisions and challenging your own assumptions. So instead of just assuming the surface level reaction or decision is the right one, really digging deeper and questioning your own thinking. So I jokingly say that I argue with myself all the time. Really, that's what it is. It's the minute I have a thought, I think, is this
that's
really
a great
true?
Analogy. Yeah.
How might this be true and how might it not be true? Mm. Right? Am I being too broad strokes with just say, you know, stating something that when really I should be a bit more nuanced with it? Right. So challenging your own thinking, I think is so important. And then, also asking myself, what is the hard part here? I think especially as leaders, as business owners, we need to think about what is the hard part of this project? You know, I think a lot of times we get caught up in things that make us feel productive, things mm-hmm. that we already know how to do. So I would say that, something that most of us know how to do and can kind of execute is a milestone calendar for a launch, right? Planning out the different milestones, yeah. right? Who needs to do what? Okay. So that's something that feels more comfortable and can make us feel like we're being productive, feel like we're advancing. When the part that is the hard part, that if that part didn't work, everything else is null, might be, you know, whether we should do this at all. If we have limited resources, is this the thing that we want to invest in? Or is there something else that is more highly leveraged that's going to get us to our goal faster, more efficiently, more effectively, right? So the what should we work on? What should it look like? Of all the options of ways that this could look, what do you think it should look like? What should it be? What should it not be, right? Mm-hmm. These are much harder questions. They are much more generative, creative questions where you are asserting something, right? You're creating something out of thin air that is not as mechanical as something like, here's a checklist of, you know, the milestone calendars and you know, and whatnot. So, of course, all the project management piece is incredibly important. Yeah. But I always like asking myself, what is the hard part here? And making sure that I am addressing that first and foremost, not shying away from it. Because yeah. if you address that last, you could do a whole bunch of work feeling really productive. And then if you can't figure out that piece, then then you can't launch anyway, or you can't move forward anyway, right? And so whatever the hard part is, you really want to address it first. And so that requires discipline and intellectual honesty on our part. And that's something that I think a lot about.
What has been, you know, one of the hardest lessons you've learned about leadership, Wes, and how has it shaped your approach today?
I think a lot of times stepping up and being a leader can feel like a thankless job. It can feel like you are carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders and you're dealing with so much uncertainty, so much ambiguity. And you know, you are the one reassuring other people, you're reassuring your team, your customers, et cetera. But that flows usually in one direction, as it should. You know, I don't think we shouldn't expect our team members necessarily to reassure us, right? And so there's a lot of pressure. And I don't really think that ever goes away. I think that if you are someone who really cares about your work and you're building things that haven't been built before, there's always going to be that ambiguity. There's always going to be that uncertainty because no one has been in your exact position doing the exact thing you're trying to do in this moment in time. And by the nature of trying to create something new, you're kind of going into uncharted territory. And I think just being aware that, you're not doing anything wrong. You're not messing up in any way to feel the way that you feel. It's just like, this is hard. You know, like if it were easy, everyone would be doing it.
Yeah.
And it's hard. That's why you get paid the big bucks. Like, right. And just embracing that, it feels hard. And feeling hard is not a reflection of, you not being where you need to be or, you know, making mistakes or anything. I think just the fact that you are trying to do something difficult and, going to places that few other people go to. And that's kind of the price that you pay to, do really amazing work with amazing people and have the chance to build something big. So there is that trade-off of, you know, it's going to feel like a burden sometimes.
It does. And I think it's also a fine balance because I think leadership also often involves then balancing transparency and confidence. So how can we navigate this balance, especially like you say, in times of uncertainty and uncharted territory or change?
Yeah, I think it's about being clear and sharing with your team what you think is important for them to understand, even if it's not positive. You know, I don't think that people are looking for kid gloves, you know, to be treated like kids who, you know, who can't hear any bad news. You know, I think people want to hear what the state of a situation is in clear, honest terms, not sugarcoated, and, you know, too overly, you know, massaged, but also not melodramatic, not overly negative and overly catastrophic. I think a lot of times we as leaders like can swing too much in one direction or the other. You know, we either like, oh, it's fine, everything's fine. Or it's like, oh my gosh, like we're feeling really nervous or worried about something. And then so we project onto other people. We project that, you know, that uncertainty, that anxiety. And I think that balanced approach of being clear and being accurate with what you are saying. I'm a very big fan of being accurate with what you are saying. I think that we don't talk about that enough, you know? And you can avoid a lot of trouble if you are accurate. So that means like, I'm not going to say something as a guarantee if it's not a guarantee, right? I'm not going to act like something is locked in and a fact that's, you know, a foregone conclusion, inevitable, if that's not really the case. Speaking accurately, you know, might be instead of saying like, we're definitely going to be successful, right? Doing this, like, I don't know if we're going to be successful, right? But saying like, we are pulling all the levers at our disposal to increase the chances of success here, right? We're doing like, we're turning over every stone and being smart about how we're investing this. And so like, you know, our hypothesis is that's going to really increase the chances of success.
Yeah. That's
right. Accurate. So like, that's an example of something that is accurate versus like overly promising. You know, I think when we overpromise and the thing doesn't work as inevitably, you know, if you overpromise, like there's going to be something that doesn't work, then people are shocked, disappointed. You lose a lot of trust.
Confidence.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. So, you know, with my team, like I'm not going to promise there's not going to be any changes. Right? I'm not going to promise you're going to report to me forever versus someone else. Right? Yeah. Like, I'm not going to promise those things because I don't know. Right. But what I can promise you is when we work together, I'm going to invest in you. I'm going to care about our dynamic and your growth. I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to hold you to a high standard.
Yeah.
I'm going to recognize when you do great work and then also point out when you're not doing great work. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's very fair. Right. And so I think it's that speaking accurately and being fair with people. I think that goes a really long way.
Mm. And you know, Wes, if you could only teach one concept or principle for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
Mm. Only one principle. Okay. So it's the one principle would probably be to frame your communication in terms of what the other person cares about.
Wow. So it's almost like personalizing in that sense.
Yes. Yes.
To different stakeholders.
Yeah. Because so often, you know, when we are excited about an idea, we share all the reasons it benefits us, all the reasons we are excited versus reasons that the other person may be excited, right? Why is this interesting for them?
How it impacts them. Yeah.
How does it impact them? How does it impact their team? How does this slot under one of their existing priorities of something that they already care about, right? How can you frame your idea to be under an umbrella of something that they already care about, right? Versus forcing them to care about something that they don't care about, you know? And so I think that is a principle that is so applicable across your work life, your professional, you know, professional, personal, always thinking about how can I frame this in terms of what the other person cares about, how they might benefit.
And Wes, you know, I want to respect your time also. And this has been such an inspiring and insightful conversation. So for those of us who want to continue to follow you further, you and your work, where can we find you?
I write a weekly newsletter at newsletter.wesko.com. And then I also teach a course on executive communication and influence. And I do one-on-one coaching as well. And you can find out more at westko.com.
Oh, I'm so sad that time has run out. I have like so many more stuff I want to ask you. But thank you, Wes, for sharing your experiences, your lessons, your wisdom, and actionable advice. I know that all of us are better for it. And we have so many insights that we take away with us. And I am truly so grateful to have you on the show. So thank you so much.